Okay, so disability screen, and I'm joined by a panel of people who will introduce themselves, but they are Hayden Spencer, Jonathan Edwards, Anne Mellon, and Christine Gangrene, and we welcome them. Tim is going to be coordinating the whole thing, but Hayden Spencer is going to be talking to us first, who is a student at St John's Nottingham. And I am supervising his thesis. And when is it going to be in? Over to Tim, and he'll be coordinating the session.
So thank you, Roy. Hey, where would you like to speak from?
Wherever you want.
Your choice.
Afternoon, everybody. It's a huge privilege to be speaking to you this afternoon on the subject of disability, God, identity, and the church. I've got 12 minutes. So we'll have no problem getting through the whole of the subject. Is that alright? First, just a little bit about me. I'm Hayden. I'm just pushing the right side of 30. Not that you can tell. Recently married to the wonderful Jo, just moved house, just about to get ordained as a deacon in the Church of England. Providing I make it through the next week and a half at college and finish my thesis. This should indicate to you that if anyone here has trouble understanding who they are at the moment, it's probably me. Now, you probably know that around 10% of the UK population can be classed as disabled in some way. I've always found it interesting that this proportion is not, broadly speaking, represented in our church congregations and leadership structures. Notwithstanding the need for aptitude, the call to vocation from God, and of course, if you go to St. John's, an awful lot of formation. I find it hard to understand why our churches are not usually the one part of an increasingly disparate society that are reflecting the true diversity and welcome of the Kingdom of God. We, as a church, have a mission, opportunity, and imperative not just to anticipate that people with diverse abilities and impairments will come to us in churches, but to throw open our doors. The people that our society is increasingly in the practice of rejecting and casting aside should find a home with us. After all, this is what God does. Look at the ragtag bunch of followers that Jesus co-opted. Look at the number of depressed and anxious people who were the key characters in the Old and New Testament scriptures. As an aside, I'd hazard a guess that there's hardly a key biblical character that would pass a modern psychiatric well-being assessment. How many of them would be welcome in our churches? Would we be up for a prophet lying naked on one side for a year and then turning over on the other side and doing the same thing? It makes for an interesting risk assessment. Anyway, I digress, and in 12 minutes that's a dangerous thing to do. Given that welfare reform and the tide of media-driven public opinion is, I believe, turning against disabled people, what do we as Christian individuals and communities have to offer as an alternative? Just yesterday, I decided to catch the bus, which I'm sure you'll agree is an entirely dangerous endeavour. I really shouldn't be allowed to catch the bus. So I made it down to the bus stop. I live on a hill, so the bus stop is at the bottom of the hill, so this is a good thing. Downhill is better than uphill. I sat at the bus stop for 20 minutes on a bus with a nice blue and white sign wheelchair came along, and the bloke who was driving shrugged his shoulders at me and said, "I've already got a wheelchair, mate," and drove on. Then I waited another 20 minutes to be met again by a bus. Fortunately, it was a bus stop after all. And this time it came along, and by the time it arrived, there were four prams and babies, not just prams, with attendant parents, I assume. So when I did eventually get on the bus, which the bus driver kindly lowered the floor of, which they're actually paid to, but they make it seem like you ruined their day. we had to do what I can only really describe as a Torbill and Dean-esque dance, whilst I attempted to manoeuvre myself into the designated wheelchair space, which I had so rudely attempted to designate for myself, as I am, in fact, a wheelchair. So, I was thinking about this because I was thinking about what I was going to say to you today, and I thought, well, if it's so hard to get on a bus, how much harder is it to get into a church? And if I don't really feel welcome on a bus, how am I going to feel welcome in a church? That was just a funny story that I had no theological basis at all. I think it all boils down to, how do we know who we are? It's a key question. I believe we know who we are because of who God is. There's a danger of us building God in our own image. We want God to identify with our weakness in the disabled God. We want God to heal. We want God to be wise, strong, powerful, victorious. We want a father, a mother, a friend, a brother. And it changes depending on who we are and what day it is. This is natural human nature, I think. But the truth of it is so much more exciting and powerful than that. We're made by a creator God for Him. We're His pleasure, His delight, in ways that we can never properly understand. Every single person who has ever lived and who ever will live has the spark of the divine within them, the potential and the promise that they are divinely cherished, offered joy, peace and hope now and in the age to come. And that promise is there from the start. Jesus Christ is who He said He was, and He did what He said He would do. You can tell I'm training to be a vicar, can't you? Even though it's very much about the here and now, our faith is about the future too. We have a future beyond time hope, as well as a hope for today. It's hard to remember often when we're faced with pain, brokenness and injustice, suffering, and when we cause those things ourselves so much. But the truth is that God is calling His church to know who they are by knowing who He is, as far as it can. As Hans Renders has so ably demonstrated, it's not simply about how much we know, and as John Swinton was talking about this morning, it's about how each and every person, whether they know it or not, speaks something into the world of the divine and points to a future hope in which surely we will all be changed. I don't think it's clear cut as to whether impairments will remain in the age to come. I have a sneaking suspicion that God might deal with us in His grace on a case-by-case basis, according to our needs and desires. But that doesn't get me very good marks in my essay. What is clear is that social disablement, exclusion from community and relationship, and the denial of the ability to participate in the life, love and work of God will not be part of the new creation. Social disablement of this type has no place in the kingdom of God. As we live out what it is to follow Jesus now, today, social disablement should have no place in our lives, our churches. All that said, the church is God's, not ours. It is not ours to include and exclude people. It's ours to participate together in the privilege of seeing the kingdom come. As we've heard already today, churches with disabled people in them are stronger, not weaker, more reflective of the body of Christ. I want to encourage you to minister with disabled people, whether you consider yourself to be disabled or not. Live with disabled people. There's a lot of you who don't think you're going to be disabled in your life. You probably will end up being, so bear that in mind. That sounded a morbid, didn't it, sorry?
But it's true.
Yeah, it's true presence, wasn't it? It's not for us to decide who gets in. God already did that by dying once for all and rising once for all, that all might be offered eternal life. Here's a little plea from me, which is my opinion and not the opinion of the organisers of the conference. It's put that on Twitter now, isn't it? If you pray for healing in Jesus' name by leading people to the well of living water that leads to life. Don't just pop them off with attempts to cure, unless God specifically calls you to in the moment that you pray for them. What kind of God are we introducing and living out to people? Is it the God who will fix them, normalize them, make them like us? Or is it something closer to the actual God, one who calls for his creation to flourish and reflect his glory, to acknowledge him in all of our ways, and to accept his gracious mercy and forgiveness when we fall short? This is a challenge for me too, as I sit before you. It'd be great, I would love it, to have pithy answers, because you'd laugh more. To be able to talk about problems with identity and disability and tell you how to minister to yourselves and one another to make these issues a thing of the past. But I can't. I fail at knowing who I am all the time. It's easy for me to be known as a disabled person or a depressed person, but I don't want to be known by either of those labels alone. I'm known only in the light of the life, death, resurrection and ascension of Jesus Christ and his gift of his Spirit to be with us until his return. So how are we who we are? We are who we are through the unchanging God of creation, redemption, reconciliation, whose promise is sure and whose hope is certain. I have a hope that our churches will lead the way in society in the coming years in showing that what the world considers weak and unnecessary, the economy of the kingdom considers a strength and entirely necessary. Let's participate in the coming of the kingdom together. Thank you for listening.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Hayden, for bringing such an important message to us, and wish you every blessing in your ministry. Now I'd like to invite Anne to come speak to us. Thank you, Anne.
Thank you very much for having me here. It's a pleasure to be part of today and with so many people who are bringing so much to the world of disability and church. And I'm here to talk on the subject of autism. What does it mean for Christians? That's a very good question. Me personally, I'm autistic. I'm also face blind, which means I can't recognise people from their faces, makes it doubly challenging. But if any of you do know me and are thinking, why am I just walking straight past you? That's why. I am an advisor to the government on autism, and I'm also the person who has written the Church of England's guidelines for autism. But I work with many of the churches, and I have a long association with Churches for All. It's a wonderful subject. It really is. It's a great amount of enthusiasm that's going on now, nationally and internationally, around this. And if we can move along a slide, let's do some challenging of what we think autism is or isn't. We know for a fact that it's not a mental health condition. It is a brain design difference. And that is the case from birth. So we're looking at that. It seems to be happening somewhere in the womb. No one knows the cause, but we think it's now 1 in 30 people. Now, that is one big number. And that's certainly the number we're starting to see now from the professionals in the universities who are doing some research on this. Hands up those who are surprised by that statistic. Yeah. Lots of people used to think it was 1 in 1,000, 1 in 10,000, 1 in 30. So you think about your churches and your communities, how many people with autism do you have? What we are also seeing is that it's any age, any background, any IQ, and it can be either male or female, and we think it's equal. But the women were really good at hiding. No one spotted me. And our ability to disguise our differences at great personal cost has meant that we are the hidden half of autistic people. It is a challenging disability because people think we're being rude. And they think we're being rude because it is a social communication disability. We can't see the body language and eye contact and face expressions that other people can see, and we also have some difficulty in understanding lots of language coming at us all at once. So we'll talk a little bit about that. But it's also something else very important, a dislike of changes of routine, and we'll explore a little bit of why that is, because that's important with churches. And the big reason why that is the case is because of sensory processing difficulties. And the more we're looking at what autism is or isn't, the more we're realising it seems to be largely about sensory processing. Now, if you've got people who are deaf or people who are blind, then they are taking in too little information. Would you agree? Their eyes can't see enough, their ears can't hear enough. With someone who is autistic, it's the precise opposite because we're taking in too much. We see too much, we hear too much, we feel too much. We can smell every perfume and aftershave in a room. I'm generalising, but that's the level of sensory difficulty we're in. All the time we are bombarded with sensory information and it comes at us too fast for us to be able to process it. So it's like being deaf and blind in some ways, because we might as well be when we're in a big crowd. So much is happening around us, we can't make sense of it. And this is why you'll find autistic people hiding in a corner or in a quiet room. We're not being antisocial. We love being with people. I've yet to meet an autistic person that really, really doesn't. But we want to be able to interact with people in a way that we can handle. So, an awful lot of information now coming through from the autism world that's disproving a lot of what we thought it was and wasn't. Please, can I have the next slide? Thank you very much. Here's some interesting stuff. I've had all sorts of interesting questions over the years, like, can we be proper Christians? Whatever a proper Christian is. Anyone ever met a proper Christian? It's a strange concept, but yes we can. Whatever it is, I'm sure we can be that. Do we lack empathy? No, we don't. It may take us a while to process what on earth's going on because we can't see people properly. So if people are sitting there looking sad, we might not be able to see them. And then people used to think, oh, they have no empathy, they're not empathizing with this poor sad person. We just can't see. So it's a different way of thinking about autism. Do we lack a soul? Goodness, I have had this question asked of me. And it is fairly extraordinary that we're in a world where that can be a question, but it has been. And yes, of course we have a soul. We're people like everyone else. Another one, can non-verbal people with autism understand God? Yes, because for the first 10 years of my life, I could not hold a conversation, but I knew God was there. God is bigger than someone's ability to use language. Never doubt that. He can make himself known to anyone. And can we bring good things to God and to church? I think a lot of churches are worried about whether we're going to be a burden to them, whether we're going to be disruptive, whether we're going to cost them things. And that's so the wrong attitude, because we bring the gifts that everyone can bring. We can bring friendship, we can bring love, we can bring prayer, we can bring worship skills. So many of us are also gifted in one particular area, maybe music, maybe accountancy. So exploring what we can bring is vital, and we love bringing things to places. On the next slide, please. Now, this gives you a clue how different my sensory world is from yours, if you can see this. On the left-hand side, a room probably the same sort of way as you see it. And on the right, how I see it. People didn't realize this about autism. They just thought we were being awkward. But if you're in that kind of thing where fluorescent lighting is absolutely blinding to you, and nearly everything happens under fluorescent lighting, then you've got a problem. And the next one, please. I'm not a brain scientist, do not panic. We're not going to talk about brain science, but have a look at those two brains. These are from real scans that have been done of autistic people. On the left-hand side, an autistic brain, and on the right-hand side, a non-autistic brain. Both of them trying to solve a social dilemma. The one on the right has got wiring designed to do that, and it gets on with it. Ours doesn't, and so it fires up every circuit it has, completely exhausts itself, and eventually, snap, switches off. And that is a physical wiring problem in the brain. So when we're faced with a big social situation, we need some downtime to think about it. We can't always solve it at the time. And resting after a big event, this is why we have a quiet room here, so that people like me can go down and just zone out for a couple of minutes. And the next slide, please. See those pictures? Lots of different expressions, except I don't know the difference between any of them. I can't see them. You can, I can't. I'm generalizing, perhaps some of you can't either. But if you're the sort of person that relies heavily on face expressions to convey your meaning to someone like me, we're going to be stuck. I've taught myself to use body language and eye contact and face expressions because I'm a trainer. I wouldn't normally use them, especially not in my own family, where everyone is autistic. We don't need to make eye contact. We don't need to use face expressions. So it's a different language communication system. And the next one, please. Most people's brains have a very handy bit for just hearing one voice in a crowd. I think that's amazing, because you can be in a crowd and just talk to the person that you're with, and you can hear them. I can't do that. I hear every single voice around me. For some people who are hard of hearing, say it's the same principle if they're using hearing aids, just filtering out one voice becomes quite hard. So, again, it's really easy for me to be somewhere else in a quiet corner speaking, and it's not me being antisocial. I just can't filter out that background noise. And the next, please. Body language misunderstandings. If I get tired, I don't make eye contact, and people think I'm bored with them. And that's a real problem, because I'm not bored with them, I love being with them. but I drop eye contact. And some of us use repetitive movements, and it looks strange. We might flap, we might rock. And people think, aye, aye, what's going on here? And they start edging away from us. And it's because we have difficulty knowing where our bodies are. And a lot of us use it so we know how to reconnect with our bodies. Again, it's a brain wiring difference, and not something to do with just behaviour too strange to contemplate. And the next. Sharing of the beasts in churches. One of two things will happen around autism. We will either flee the room, terrified that someone is going to hug us, because it can hurt. So always do ask. Or, with a few, especially if they're younger, they tend to throw themselves with great enthusiasm at it, and you will get hugged whether you are the Archbishop or not. So either way, it can need a bit of moderating, and just being really clear with us is very important. But don't assume a bad motive. We're not trying to do it to be awkward. It's just that kind of social interaction that we find tricky to moderate. And our next slide. Do we need curing? Lots of people like to pray for a cure. I don't want a cure. Strange thing to say, but I don't. And in fact, 85% of autistic people don't want to be cured. We have a different way of being. We don't necessarily see ourselves as broken. We're not broken versions of real people. And I bring to you Nicodemus. Next time you're reading the Bible, have a scan through for what that guy was and wasn't, because I think he was autistic. You think about it, he snuck up to Jesus in the dark, so away from all the crowds and the light. He completely misunderstood metaphors. That's something we are really good at doing. God, we could misunderstand metaphors. He reached for the rule book when Jesus was having his trial. He tried to solve it using rules. That's something else we are really good at trying to do. We don't use impassioned pleas to emotions. We'll just go, ah, paragraph 4, subsection 5, you can't do that. People think, my goodness, you know, what's wrong with these people? But we are very rule-based. And when he turned up at the tomb, he brought a huge load of herbs and spices. He must have been staggering up the hill. He's only supposed to bring a little bit. So that was a bit of a social faux pas. And I think there's something to be said for thinking, was he autistic? We don't know. The diagnosis didn't exist back then. But he was there when others weren't. And obviously, Jesus did not cure him. He was one of Jesus' friends. So it's a thought. It's just something to think about as you go. And finally, top tips. As with all things disability, ask what might help. Please try to be not only accepting but welcoming. We love to help people. We love to share life as equals. Please try to use clear language with us, not just your body language and your voice tone. Please try not to come straight up to us and hug us if we don't know who you are, because that will panic us. Fluorescent lighting is often our enemy. Try to chat with us somewhere quiet away from fluorescent lighting. Please don't assume that we're trying to be rude to you. We're just not. We may be clumsy with it, but it's not deliberate. And you will find there's more information available on our final slide, which can be sent out. You can get information from me about autism, or indeed from the fantastic National Autistic Society, with whom I work quite closely. And there's also a brilliant 2-minute video on autism sensory difficulties, which we can give out afterwards. And you can just have a look for yourselves and see how that is. And that's it. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Anne, for a real personal insight there into living with autism. Thank you so much for that. And now we're going to invite Reverend Jonathan Edwards to speak to us on a pastoral response to the welfare cuts.
Friends, I'm really happy to be sharing with you for these few minutes. There are three reasons at least why I'm really happy to share with you. Firstly, I'm a Baptist pastor, and so looking at a pastoral response to the present context of welfare cuts suits me well, but secondly, I'm a dad. I have three children, and one of our children is 21 years old, he's called Tom, and Tom is autistic. Thanks, Anne, for what you've just shared. It's great to hear those things said, and I feel supported and helped as you say those things. Tom has many wonderful gifts, and he's opened the eyes of my family to a new world. I say with embarrassment, 21 years ago, we hadn't a clue what autism was. Now we really feel we know. He has a sister, Tom, an elder sister, Hannah. Hannah has always been fascinated by Tom. When Hannah was 10 years old, I remember her saying to me, "Dad, I just can't wait to understand what's going on in Tom's brain. I really want to know what's happening there. It's so interesting." In an A-level essay 6 years ago, Hannah wrote this in a compelling phrase. Hannah writes far more powerfully than I will ever be able to. She described him as having the ability to bring light into any room. We thank God for Tom. You won't be surprised to hear that Hannah, having completed her social work degree, is now a member of a learning disability team. God has a way of doing these things. So we thank God for Tom, and he has brightened and opened our life to a wonderful new world. Forward to thank him. That's God and Tom. The third reason for my commitment to this is I'm now working as executive ambassador for Prospects, a learning disability charity, which is doing fantastic work. Many of you will know about it, supporting about 300 people through our services, but also through our ministry groups, welcoming something like 3,000 people every month to the 220 ministry groups that we have around the country. So that's just proof I'm happy to be here. What are we going to do? What's our pastoral response in the light of the welfare cuts? A preacher, three things. First, we need deeper understanding of what's going on. The fact is, probably the biggest problem that we face is that disability is generally hidden. So what is happening in terms of the benefit cuts at the moment is largely hidden, partly because people don't want to know, but in measure also because they're not interested. So we have an educative task. And the education for us should start with our local churches. Our churches need to be aware that people with disabilities are twice as likely to live in poverty as the population as a whole. It shouldn't be like that, but that's a fact. Our churches need to be aware of the reality of the cuts, which are biting so deeply and so painfully in every community in the land. All the major political parties agree that the national deficit must be reduced, and we probably wouldn't want to disagree with them. We do need to cut the national deficit. But in one of the wealthiest countries in the world, it is not appropriate that the weakest members of society should pay such a high price. So we have things to say. There was an appalling case recently in which a 44-year-old man in Oxfordshire, near to where I live, died weighing 5.5 stone 5 months after staff from the government contractor Atos had assessed him as fit to work despite several disabilities and illnesses. The government later admitted that the decision to stop his benefits was wrong, but by then it was too late. He'd taken his own life. Just one case, but there are many like it. In our work in Prospects, we are seeing the effect of cuts constantly. Local authorities seeking to squeeze us in every contract that we have. We understand where they're coming from. We understand that they would probably choose not to lose our services. But as they pound by pound, pence by pence cut us back, we're needing agonisingly to cut back on what we do. We've just withdrawn from our service in Cornwall within the last month. When we did so, Cornwall County Council pointed out that 5 other providers have recently handed in the keys as well. We regret this deeply, but these are the reality. People need to understand where we are at this time. These are tough days. The projections are clear for the years to come, and that is that local authorities will be cutting back more and more. The Barnett graph of doom is horrific, that over the coming years it is likely that children's and adult care, service care, will take up all the money that local authorities have to spend. Every other provision, including bin collections, sports centres, parks, libraries, anything else, will just not be there if they are to fulfil their legal responsibilities to provide care. Most Christians will not be affected by these cuts directly. And so we need to work at helping people to have an understanding of what is happening. The information is there. We live in a society where there's never a lack of information. What we need is understanding, helping our local communities to understand the nature of what's going on. Secondly, that was deeper understanding, we need a louder voice. We need to speak up. The scourge of the church so often is that people will not speak out. We don't want to make a fuss. We're nice people. We don't want to burden people. And so we say nothing. That is irresponsible. We must speak out. It's wonderful when people with disabilities speak out. But it's important that all of us, their friends as well, speak out. I believe that at the local level, it's really valuable where churches appoint somebody to have a watching brief for disabilities. I know some charities are suggesting the appointment of additional needs coordinators in every church. Somebody who will be a focus, who will actually keep these things on the agenda of the church. Because without it, we will be busy with other things. We need somebody who will be the champion for these concerns. But beyond the local church, we need to ensure the local community is aware of what's going on. I believe that we're in a supreme position in our churches to make a contribution. We offer to our local communities the amazing resource of buildings.
Did this up? We were encouraged. I'll go back to the beginning. I'm Jonathan now. Deeper understanding. Secondly, we need a louder voice. We need a louder voice within our churches, and we need to coordinate that more effectively. Secondly, we need a louder voice within our local communities. But can I also say nationally, let's not be so humble, is really what I'm saying. We've got things to say. I believe politicians want to hear what we have to say. In the past few years, I've had the privilege of spending a lot of time with politicians and of going regularly to party conferences. There I've met with cabinet ministers, MPs, lords, generous opportunities to speak with them about issues of concern. What I've found consistently is that they are concerned about our agendas, genuinely concerned about our agendas, and we need to help them. We need to speak out. We need to take opportunities to visit our local MPs, to speak to our councillors, to speak out with things that we believe are gospel agendas. Finally, we need, in the light of the particular challenges at this moment, to take effective action. We need to reach out with love to those with disabilities within our church communities. That sounds a daft thing to say, doesn't it? But we need to say it, because often, even in local church life, people with disabilities are pushed to the edge. We need to find ways of building confidence in local churches to thoroughly include those with disabilities. I went to a church last year, wonderful. They didn't know what I was going to be speaking at particularly, they had just invited me to preach. On the door, I'd never been to this church before, on the door, the person greeting my wife and I was somebody with a learning disability, handing out the notice sheet, telling me I was welcome. They were supported by somebody else. When the offering was taken up, it was taken up by somebody in a wheelchair, supported by somebody else. That church didn't need to tell me they cared about people with disabilities. They were doing it. It was their life. We need to do it. I believe we need to take effective action. Maybe the appointment of an additional needs coordinator is a positive action that we could take. We could take it back to our church leaders and suggest it, that it might be something that's helpful. But we mustn't stop at our doors. This isn't just about reordering the church. We're talking about building the kingdom. And so we need to take this message beyond. We need to find opportunities, as many churches are finding, finding opportunities to embrace people within our communities with disabilities. We're so blessed with Plant. It's great to see more and more churches opening their doors to people of various disabilities and saying, you are special, we prize you, you are made in the image of God. So I'm acknowledging these are tough times, but we're Christians. We have hope. We have something wonderful to share with our local communities. We, of all people, need, in the name of Christ, to reach out to people with disabilities and to show them respect, to give them dignity, and to reach out with the caring hands of Christ. Thank you.
And thank you, Jonathan, so much for bringing that message to us, very important. You've had a lot of input. Now it's time to involve yourselves, and so I'm going to hand over to Christina Gangemi, who's going to lead us through the next session of this session.
Thank you. I'm really lucky because there's 18 minutes. With 18 minutes, I'm lucky because it means that we can actually hand over to you and get the response to the incredible witness that we've had from our speakers. I think what's important about this workshop is that we're hearing the stories of real Christians telling their real lives, and disability theology is all about that. It's about exploring God through the life experience of people with disabilities. So it's now our privilege to receive from you. Let me ask you, hands up, anybody who wants to answer? What struck you most from all that you heard today?
What struck me the most today was John Swinton's talk just before we came to coffee, where he talks about discipleship, and that means for everybody. We, of course, our prospects were non-trained, have been looking at ascension, and the message for us all is that the Great Commission is for absolute every single person to engage in. And so we've been exploring how Jesus has affected each one of our lives so that we can proclaim the gospel to other people. But on that journey, we journey together. We don't ask people to come back to where they were, and we don't ask people to come to where we are, beautiful though that may be. We are journeying together, and we're learning together, and we're exploring a new place. And through that meeting that we had, I was struck by the fact that some of us have not got words. We don't have words to express the love of Jesus in our lives. But we have got facial expression, we have got joy in our hearts, and we are, and our bodies absolutely vibrate with the love of Jesus. So we're learning how to, first of all, respect that every single person has a mission and has a discipleship, whatever abilities and disabilities, but that we're all walking together on that journey. And as Jesus did with the disciples walking the road to Emmaus, he asked questions and he listened to the answers. Sometimes we have to look for the answers through our other senses to really appreciate the beauty of everybody. We are all made in the image of God. We are fearfully and wonderfully made. So I was just that impressed by John's words.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's, I'm sure you'll be pleased about that. So looking, therefore, at the way that each of us know God, each created and have our own way of knowing God, anybody else that would like to share something that struck them from the workshop, from our stories today? Immediate responses. Thank you.
Can I just say, it was amazing when we were worshipping earlier, and in our church, you know, you see everyone is fit and healthy, and to see so many people signing, I've never seen it. It overwhelmed me, actually. And so that was first thing. The second thing is what Anne was saying about autism. We had a colleague, and he had autism, and we really didn't know how to deal with this guy, and we really struggled. And your presentation, a very short presentation, very clearly explained how he felt, and if I'd had that talk maybe 2 years ago, we could have done a lot more for this this former colleague, because obviously he had needs, and we just didn't know how we could deal with it. So I just want to say thank you for presenting that, because it made very clear for me how he felt, and so just want to say thank you for that.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mine's on more of a negative note. I was really struck by how many people are bringing forward this idea, and it's true that everyone who is disabled has been negatively marginalised and basically put in a corner. And I think not enough people are coming forward and saying, yes, I am being put in a corner. And although I consider myself fairly able-bodied, I have a few problems, but nothing compared to what a lot of people have. I think there have been times where I've been put in a corner simply because I have a very, very minor disability. And I think everyone needs to stand up and say, I'm not going to be put in a corner anymore. This idea of marginalising everybody is just wrong, and in different words. I think a lot of people have put the same thing, that people who are not disabled are being positively discriminated, and people who are disabled in whatever severity are being marginalised. And I think that's the thing I took from it. It's kind of opened my eyes a bit to the actual correct terminology of what we should be calling it. Thank you.
Hi. What's really struck me is just the personalisation of people's testimonies, Anne's and Hayden's particularly, that we are just people, and we are all people with different experiences and different needs and different places in the church. And I think what I've learned over the years is just to listen to people, and just if we all stop and listen before we judge, then we can learn so much more about including each other and whatever needs are. And I think that's really strong came across in their speech as well. But also, I've really been challenged by Jonathan. I'd love to speak to you later, because I feel I'm very inactive and I don't speak up enough, so I've no idea where to start.
Definitely, I think that struck me as well, really, that concept of we've got to speak out. It's time. It's definitely time in Christian history. It is time. So let's have some more responses. Thank you.
Thanks. I was very encouraged to hear about the benefit cuts that people in church, if you like, are really speaking strongly about that. Although we'd really be interested to hear from conferences something about the legal framework which would, I guess, insist that churches were more inclusive and bore in mind more sensible policy. So I guess that there is legislation around, and I guess it's the Equality Act. But I feel nervous about bringing that up in my church or any other church, because you get the feeling that you're not meant to challenge about what it is that makes it legal for a church to take better care, if you like, with people with sensory impairments, because you go into most churches and you find level access and that's taken care of. But when you go into church and you find you're looking at a screen you can't see, or stuff like that, when you want to look up on your iPad, say, Bible references, that there's a great lack of awareness that it would be just so easy to give people that kind of information before they arrive. Mm-hmm. So that I could put it on my iPad, for example. Even today, I have to say that the song words were presented, I think, in 22 or 25 point size, mm-hmm. but I use 36 in my church. They will send that to me beforehand so that I can download it onto the iPad. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't take part in worship. Mm-hmm. Basically, that's a very complex that is addressing disability access in church.
Thank you. I think one of the biggest issues is we've got time for one more, so I'm sorry, I just put a line on this 18 minutes because we've run a bit late. So we've got time for one more person. I think I'll leave it to you, Tim. One thing I'd like to say while Tim's giving the microphone is Disability Equality Act and legislation and the requirements of the SEN legislation apply to our churches. All of our churches, not some, not those that choose to respond, but to all of our churches. So it's a big issue for us personally. So, yes, last person, thank you.
Well, thank you very much. I would like to explain something positive about autism. I was leading a worship at the Disabled Christian Fellowship in Birmingham, and I just leave with my voice because I make much better eye to eye contact. This steward who had autism had a big sense of timing. He jumped on me, on beat, and clapped on me, off beat, or maybe a little bit around. But his sense of timing and his sense of joy just came out. Thank you.
So all of your churches are filled with stories like you've heard today, and all of your communities can be amazed and struck in the same way. Thank you.
Fantastic, thank you so much. Sorry we didn't have enough time to get more people's input and comments. We would...